So what I want to give now is sort of a brief, sort of one small piece of this field, larger field of geometric representation theory. And I want to start off by giving sort of an advertisement for this field and how it connects to various other fields. So let me start off with that. So first of all, we've already seen some geometric representation theory at this workshop. So Joel gave a talk on this picture of affine Grassmannians. And discuss MV cycles. Right? And if you remember, he defined some varieties and their intersection homology was isomorphic to certain representations of certain classical Lie algebras, or all the classical Lie algebras, in fact. And this is related to the geometric Lang lens program. And so this is one aspect of geometric representation theory. Another one, and the one that I'm going to discuss today, is quiver varieties. So this gives us geometric realizations of representations of Katz-Moody algebras. And in particular today, I'm just going to focus on the type A case for two reasons. One, because it's sort of more concrete, and I can give a very concrete description that hopefully everybody will understand. And also because it fits in with the theme of this workshop, because the varieties in type A, these quiver varieties, are just varieties that consist of flags. So I'll sort of put flag varieties in quotes here. So I'm calling them flag varieties because the points in them are flags, but they're not really, well, certain special cases of them are the flag varieties that we've seen, but we'll see that in general they're slightly different. So this is some subset of this larger topic of quiver varieties. So another technique in geometric representation theory is to use Hilbert schemes to construct certain representations. In this case, we get representations of Heisenberg algebras. And there's lots of other constructions. So these are sort of some various aspects of geometric representation theory. So let me state how this relates to some other fields in mathematics. So first of all, I mean, this theory of quiver varieties in general was developed by Lustig and Nakajima, and Nakajima's construction was motivated by moduli spaces of instantons. So I'm really not going to explain any of these topics that I'm going to put on the outside of this square, but hopefully for everybody in the audience, at least a few of them will be familiar to them. So in particular, these quiver varieties, certain special cases where we consider quiver varieties corresponding to affine Katz-Moody Lie algebras are certain moduli spaces of instantons. So this creates, so this is related to gauge theory as well. So I know at Toronto, there's, of course, a lot of people doing symplectic geometry. So maybe I'll mention the connection to this field as well. So these quiver varieties are all symplectic manifolds, or hyperkähler in particular, and so they provide sort of this large class of examples of these objects that we can study using representation theory. Another one is that we can study classical problems in representation theory, like computing branching rules and tensor product multiplicities. Using quiver varieties. So there's some quiver variety that corresponds to a tensor product of representations, and so we can study tensor products using this geometry as well. So it's also a deep connection to quantum groups. And in particular, in quantum groups, we have special, very nice bases. So I'll say something a little bit more about these nice bases in this particular case of type A that I'll describe. So the nice bases that I'm talking about here, maybe you've heard of, are, for instance, the canonical and the semi-canonical basis, or can be defined using this geometry of quiver varieties. And this gives us all sorts of connections to things like crystal graphs, And to be even more concrete, say combinatorics of Young tableau and other combinatorial constructions. So crystal graphs, maybe just let me say one, sort of two sentences. Crystal graphs, quantum groups are can be thought of as this sort of Q deformation of Kac-Moody algebras. And crystal graphs are as Q goes to zero limit, where all the representation theory just turns to combinatorics. And you can compute various things, for instance, like branching rules and these Clebsch-Gordan coefficients, using just combinatorics of crystal graphs. And so this is related to, there's certain combinatorial realizations of these things in terms of Young tableau, but you can also realize this using these geometries. So you get this connection between these classical combinatorics and this geometry. And let me maybe make two more connections. So moduli spaces. So this is, of course, a large field. These Kruber varieties in particular are moduli spaces. And there are ties to integrable models in statistical mechanics. All right. So hopefully, at least some of these areas interest you, and therefore I've motivated you to learn about this geometric representation theory, because it has applications to all these fields and other fields. So I probably have left out the work of some people, so let me say there are more here. So really, I want to really focus in on this type A, right, for these two reasons I said, because these objects are going to be quite familiar to us after what we've seen in this workshop, and so we get a really concrete feeling for what these Kruber varieties are and what they can do and what this geometric representation theory can do. So what is our goal? So by type A, of course, I mean we're going to restrict ourselves to the Lie algebra SLN. So our goal is for a representation V of this Lie algebra SLN, we want to construct a variety. So let me draw a picture of one of these varieties that will correspond to a particular representation. So if you take the adjoint representation of SL3. So remember SLN, or the trace of n by n matrices, this is a Lie algebra, and it acts on itself, and this is the adjoint representation of SL3. So in this particular case, our Kruber variety looks as follows. So it has various connected components. Let me mention at the start, when I say variety, I don't mean irreducible. So sometimes people add in this condition. So you may notice that this sort of looks like this weight diagram for the adjoint representation of SL3. What we've got here is a bunch of varieties. So each of these are just points, right? And then we've got this variety here, which is two copies of CP1. Glued together at a point. Right, we associate this collection of varieties to this representation. And what properties do we want this to have? So we want that the number of irreducible components to equal the dimension of our representation. And even more specifically, so we can split it into connected components. And this should correspond to splitting our representation up into weight spaces. So in particular, for the adjoint representation of SL3, there are six of the weight spaces have dimension 1. That corresponds to these points where we just have one irreducible component. And then there's the Cartan subalgebra, which has dimension 2. And for that, we've got this variety, which has two irreducible components. Right, so this is this geometry. But we want to do more. We want to use this variety to actually construct this representation. So for instance, first say we want to construct the underlying vector space of this representation. So the homology of this variety is going to correspond to the vector space underlying this representation. So I'm going to say, get a bit more specific about what homology we're talking about here. And then we're going to construct the action of SLN on this homology. Well, you can go either way. For any irreducible finite dimensional representation of SLN, I'm going to be able to give you a variety. Well, you can't take any arbitrary variety and get a representation, no. These are very special representations, very special varieties. So it goes this way. For a representation, we construct a variety. All right, so maybe... Oh, so I already mentioned this. But for the experts in representation theory, even though I'm restricting myself to SLN, you should keep in mind that we can repeat this construction for arbitrary symmetric Kac-Moody-Lie algebra. So let me start off and say a few words, just maybe to set notation even for this Lie algebra SLN that we want to construct. So SLN is the n by n traceless matrices. It's got a Cartan subalgebra, which is the traceless diagonal matrices. And it's got Chevalier generators. So in this case, it gives very special or explicit form of them. So as a Lie algebra, these particular elements generate this Lie algebra. So this is just the matrix with 1 in entry I plus 1 and 0 everywhere else, etc. And these generate it. So the reason this is important to us is because when we want to construct the action of this Lie algebra on this homology, we're just going to construct the action of these Chevalier generators. And as long as they satisfy the right relations, this defines the action of the whole Lie algebra. So, any representation, well, at least the ones we're dealing with, say, finite dimensional irreducible representation of SLN, let's call it V mu. So mu is some indexing set that I'll say something about. So it splits into weight spaces. So V mu is equal to V sum over lambda V mu lambda. So each of these is a weight space, and all that means is that this Cartan subalgebra, these are all eigenvectors of the Cartan subalgebra, and basically this lambda gives us these eigenvectors. And each of these weight spaces, as I said, is going to correspond to one connected component of this variety that we're going to construct. So these finite dimensional irreducible representations are in one-to-one correspondence with, so there are many ways of saying this. Either certain partitions, but for our purposes, we'll say we want them to be certain sums of the fundamental weights. So all these coefficients should be non-negative integers, and this set, lambda I, are the fundamental weights. So I'm not going to write down the definition of this, partly because many of you probably know it, and if you don't, it's not so important. All it's important to know is that the irreducible representation is just enumerated by these weights. Right? So really, we just need to construct such a variety for each one of these weights that enumerates our representation. All right, so now let me talk about what homology we want to use in this construction. So we want to use what's called Borel-Moore homology. So in this talk, I'm just going to denote this by H star of whatever variety we're dealing with. So I'm never going to use ordinary homology, so this just means Borel-Moore. When I want to consider ordinary, all right, so just for a couple examples where I'm going to show the difference, I'll use this to denote ordinary homology. So what is Borel-Moore homology? Well, there are several equivalent definitions of it. So one definition is that we mirror this usual construction ordinary homology using singular ordinary homology, and we just allow infinite chains instead of finite chains. So one definition, allow infinite chains. So we can already see how these two homologies differ right from this definition. So for example, let's take our space to be Rn. So we have the ith degree Borel-Moore homology is the following. So it's C. Let me just be explicit. So I'm always going to take my coefficients to be complex numbers. So it's C if I is equal to N and it's zero otherwise. Whereas for ordinary homology, we know that we have something quite different. So it's C if I is equal to zero and it's zero if I is not equal to zero. All right, so these are quite different. So the reason is the following. So in ordinary homology, this degree zero piece is generated by the class of a point. Right? We have some point in Rn, and this is not the boundary of any one chain, right? Because any one chain has to be finite, and so it'd have to end somewhere else. So it's not the boundary of any one chain. Whereas in Borel-Moore homology, if we have some point, we can have some chain that just goes off to infinity. Right? Because we allow our chains to be infinite. One condition I should say, I mean, just to be more specific, we want them to be locally finite. Which means if you intersect with any compact set, you only intersect a finite number of the complexes in the chain. But for this reason, the degree zero piece in Borel-Moore homology is just zero, because we can have this chain whose tail goes off to infinity. Whereas for all of Rn, we can have a chain that fills all of Rn, and this is locally finite. That's why the degree zero piece is, right. We can have this chain that fills all of Rn and has no boundary, and this is a locally finite chain, and this is the generator in Rn. Whereas since our chains have to be finite, we can't have any chain that fills all of Rn in dimension n for the ordinary homology. So these are quite different, but you can see from this definition that if our space is compact, then Borel-Moore homology is just equal to ordinary homology. All right, this definition, while it's nice, it's not the definition that we want to use. So the definition that I want to use is the following. So we define, so Z here is some algebraic variety. So in particular, say it's a closed subset of a smooth oriented manifold M. And in particular, it can be reducible. Right? And we define it to be, we basically define it by some sort of Poincaré duality. So it's the cohomology where we shift this degree, so the real dimension of this M that we've embedded it in, minus K of M, relative to M take away Z. So this is another definition. It turns out that these two definitions are equivalent for Borel-Moore homology. So in particular, if Z is smooth, we can take M to just be Z itself, right? And this tells us that in this particular case where our variety is smooth, then Borel-Moore homology is dual to cohomology. Whereas in the ordinary case, so the case of ordinary homology, remember, is dual to cohomology with compact support. So these are different in the case when our space is non-compact. So why do we want to use Borel-Moore homology? So there's two Two main reasons. First is that we have some nice pairing on Borel-Mohr homology, which we can define just by this definition, this duality here. So remember that on this cohomology, we have this cat product. So say HK of M take away Z times H, K, L, M take away Z prime. So we have the following. So this is, we just have a relative version of the usual cat product in cohomology. So it goes to H of K plus L of M take away Z intersect Z prime. So this is this usual cat product, well, the relative version of it, and then we just apply this duality and we get some intersection pairing in Borel-Mohr homology. We apply this above definition of Borel-Mohr homology and we get this, this is the cut product. And what we get is intersection pairing, which I'll denote by a cat. So this goes from HK of Z, which is just this by definition, times HL Z prime. Maybe this K is not this K. But it goes to HK plus L minus D of Z intersect Z prime, where D is the dimension, real dimension of M. So these are different. Let me maybe put prime here.
That.
Yes, so that's a very important point. This product definitely depends on this embedding. So it turns out you'll get the same homology in terms of dimensions no matter what this embedding is. This is fine. But this product definitely depends on this embedding. But in our case, we're going to have a natural embedding, so this is fine. All right, so this is going to allow us to define this product that we want to use to get this action of our Lie algebra on this homology. So our setup is the following. We have, say, three smooth manifolds. All right, and we have various projections. So we can project to M1 cross M2, which we'll call P12. We can project to M1 cross M3. And, for instance, we could project to M2 cross M3. And then we can do the following thing. So say we have some closed subset sitting inside here, and we have some closed subset sitting inside here. So we can define a sort of composition of these two. What we do is we take P12 inverse of Z, we intersect it with P23 inverse of Z prime, and then we push it forward. Or just map it down into here. And this is, we denote this by Z circle Z prime. So what you can think of is if Z is the graph of some function from M1 to M2, and Z prime is the graph of some function from M2 to M3, then this composition here is just the graph of the composition of these two functions. So it's sort of, these are called correspondences, and it's some sort of generalization of graphs of functions like this. But we can use this to now define a certain convolution product in homology, Borel-Mohr homology. So what our goal, the reason we discussed this, is we want to define this convolution product going from HKZ times HLZ prime to HK plus L minus D of Z composes Z prime. Right? So this is our convolution product. And we basically define it in this way. So what we do is, say we have some element of this homology and some element of this homology. Then we define C convolved with C prime right? So C is sitting here, some homology class. C prime is sitting here. We pull them back. We do this intersection pairing in this larger variety up here, and then we push it forward down the middle. So we take P12, pull back C, and we intersect, do the intersection pairing with P23 pullback of C prime, and then we do a push forward. So we have to have a few things. We need that this map, for instance, is proper. If we have proper maps, we have a push forward and Borel-Moore homology. And this pullback, I should just say, is, for instance, is this. So we have this Kunneth formula in Borel-Moore homology. So when we pull back, we're just using this Kunneth formula. So this gives us some product structure on this homology. And in particular, we want to consider a particular case. So we have the following situation. We've got some map here. Maybe call it mu. And we define the following. So we define M, right, this fibered product. So this is just a set of points, M1, M2, in M cross M, that map down to the same point. And we'll call this will be our Z. And what turns out is, so then we take all of our M's in this construction here, M1, M2, and M3, to all be this smooth manifold M. And then we can do this construction, and it's not hard to see that the composition of Z with itself will be Z again. And therefore, this product gives us an algebra structure under this convolution product. And we have certain natural modules for this algebra. So we let Mx, if x is some point in N, be the fiber above this point. Then it's not hard to see that Z convolved with Mx is Mx, which tells us that the homology of Mx is a module over this algebra. So in our particular setup, this algebra, I mean, these are going to be these varieties that we're going to define, consisting of flags. And this algebra is going to correspond to the universal enveloping algebra of our Lie algebra. And this H star of Mx is going to be this representation that we want to construct. All right, so these are the tools that we need. So now let's be more specific. So let's be more specific about these varieties and these maps so we see exactly what varieties we're dealing with here. So we have the following situation. So fix an integer d greater than or equal to 1. So this is going to be fixed for the whole time, but maybe keep in mind what d we pick will depend on what representation we're trying to construct here. So this is going to be fixed. And then we consider the following flag variety. So similar to things that we've seen. So flag sitting inside CD. And N here is the same as the N and the SLN that we're trying to construct. So these are N-step partial flags. So we've been talking a lot in this workshop about a particular case where N is equal to D and we have one step for each dimension. So this is more general. So the number of steps does not have to equal this dimension D, and these steps in the flag can have any dimension. So in particular, steps can be equal and they can jump by various different dimensions. So this is slightly different. But it's still smooth and compact, and it splits into irreducible or connected components. maybe, let me see, smooth and compact, but not connected. So the connected components are given by just fixing the dimensions of the steps in the flag, right? No, no, what do you mean?
The components.
Oh, no, 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 they're different. So for instance, if these can all be zero, that's just a point. I mean, related to the situation that we're going to have over here. So the connected components, so this splits up into a disjoint union over partitions. So D is just D1 up to DN, some non-negative integers. The reason I call them partitions, the sum of the DI should add up to D. So they're partitions of this D that we take. And FD, by definition, is a set of flags. So this whole connection, this whole collection, by F, such that the dimension of Fi mod Fi plus 1 is Di. All right, so we just fix the relative dimensions of these steps in the flag. That gives us the connected components. So this is going to be our, no, not quite. So somehow these, the sum of di is equal to this d. Yeah, so you can just see from this condition. Somehow these aren't interesting enough, right? Because they're all smooth and compact. We want to see stuff like this start to happen where we have different irreducible components, right? So this is how we're going to get that. We let N be the set of endomorphisms of this space CD such that x to the n is 0. And then we consider the following. We want to consider the cotangent bundle to this flag variety. So this cotangent bundle is isomorphic to the following set, which we'll call M because it's going to be the M in this construction here. So it's isomorphic to the following sets. Pairs X and F, where X is one of these endomorphisms, these nilpotent endomorphisms. F is one of these flags. And we have the following condition, that X should send Fi into Fi minus 1. And this is, turns out to be isomorphic to the cotangent bundle, to the flag variety. And of course, this again splits up into irreducible components just according to this decomposition. So the cotangent bundle to each of these connected components, or I should say connected components. The cotangent bundle to each of these connected components is just the corresponding connected component of this cotangent bundle. So this also splits into MD, where MD is the cotangent bundle to our particular connected component of the flag variety. So then we have some projections. So M means some natural projections. Right, it just naturally projects us to both N and F. It just takes XF to either X or F. Right, and N is just the variety that we're going to have here. So we have exactly the situation that we want here. We have this M and a map to N, like what we wanted here. So then we just follow this procedure to construct this algebra and this module. So what was the procedure? The procedure was we let Z be this fibered product. And then we know, so let me make sort of, maybe especially for the symplectic geometers, let me tell you something about this. So proposition is that Z is the union of the conormal bundles to the GLDC orbits in F cross F. So if you don't know what a conormal bundle is, don't worry so much about it. Maybe just keep in mind, we have a very explicit description of the irreducible components of this variety. In a conormal bundle, you just take an orbit, and then you look for things in the cotangent bundle that kill the tangents to this orbit. And one nice property is that these are all the same dimension. They're all half the dimension of M cross M. So we have this general construction. So we already know automatically that this is going to have a module structure by this convolution product. But in particular, we define the following. Let this be the... before I define this state, one more thing about Borel-Moore homology. So if we have some variety Z, it doesn't have to be this one, so let me say X, has dimension V, then the top dimensional Borel-Moore homology has a basis given by the classes of the irreducible components of X of dimension D. And this is the second reason why we're using Borel-Moore homology, because it has this nice property. So it's exactly what we want over here, because we split this variety into these components, and each irreducible component, the number of irreducible components is the dimension of our representation, and then we want a vector space of this dimension. So we want some homology theory that has this property, that it's got, as a basis, the classes of the irreducible components. And Borel-Moore homology exactly has this property. So then back to our situation up here, we let H top Z be the span of the top dimensional, or classes of, the top dimensional irreducible components of Z. And maybe let me say one note about this. So what do I mean by top dimensional irreducible components? So Z is not connected, right? Because it splits up, I mean, M is not even connected, so it splits up in this way. What I mean is that for each connected component, we take the classes of the top dimensional irreducible components in that connected component. So in this, if you were to consider this all as one variety, maybe it's complex dimension one, but in each irreducible component, so we'll take the class of this point, all these points, and of each of these CP1s. Because in each connected component, we take the classes of the irreducible components of top dimension. But we already know they're all the same dimension, these irreducible components in each connected piece anyway. So we're taking basically the classes of all the irreducible components of Z. This is H top. And we do the same thing for H top MX. So remember, in this setup, MX is just the fiber of one of these X's. So we have the following proposition. So we know that we have this algebra structure on this Borel-Moore homology, but what turns out, and what I mean we need for this construction, is that these top dimensional pieces are stable under this product. So H top Z is stable. So what I mean by that is it's a subalgebra of this convolution algebra. And H top of MX is a it's H top Z stable is what I mean to say. Subspace of the homology of MX. So we can consider it just as a module of this subalgebra, and that's what we want to do. So this subalgebra is going to be what's called the universal enveloping algebra of our Lie algebra, and this module of this subalgebra is going to be our representation. Right, so now we want to construct the action. So we have this module, and this is going to be the underlying vector space of the representation that we want to construct. Well, mx was, so if this is mu, mu inverse x. So we fix an x, and it's all the flags such that x of fi sits inside f of I minus 1 for this fixed x. So this is no longer irreducible. This is going to be, in the case of SL3, this mx exactly looks like this. And the particular representation that we want to construct is going to be encoded in this x. Right? We're going to pick this x based on what representation we want to construct. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I should say maybe for all x. All right, so this is our underlying vector space. Now we want to construct the action of the Lie algebra on this module. So remember I said we had these Chevalier generators. Really, we want to just construct the action of these Chevalier generators, and then it suffices to show that they satisfy the relations of the Lie algebra. So let's describe these. Remember our Chevalier generators, EI and FI, are the Chevalier generators of our Lie algebra. So let's construct the action of these. Oh, well, let's also, okay. So we do this in the following way. We define these following varieties. Maybe let me just say, first of all, sort of the general idea of what we're going to do. We have these flags. And they have this property that behave nicely with respect to this fixed endomorphism. And what we want to do is the action of these Chevalier generators is going to increase or decrease the dimension of the kth step of the flag. That's all the Chevalier generators are going to do. But we have to make this precise and make this an action on homology. But that's all I'm going to be doing, is describing how we increase or decrease the dimension of this step. So we define the following varieties. So k plus, because it's going to increase the dimension by one of the kth step of the flag. So it's the following variety. So it's x f prime f. So the reason I denoted that, remember what, this is going to be some subset of Z. Z was this fibered product. So its elements, two elements of M who have the same element X, right? So I can just describe it this way, one X and two flags. And have the following, so in Z, which already means that they have to satisfy, both flags have to satisfy this condition. And all the steps of the flag should be the same. Whenever we're not at K, and then at K, we have this embedding, and we want the codimension to be 1. Right, so these flags are equal everywhere except at the kth step, where F prime is one dimension bigger, and we have this embedding property. And then yk minus is almost the exact same thing. But we are decreasing the dimension. So now we want fk prime to sit inside fk, and the other codimension to be 1. And these are both subsets inside this variety Z. So in particular, maybe I didn't explicitly mention this fact, but in Borel-Mohr homology, anytime you have some closed subvariety, and these are closed, you get a class in Borel-Mohr homology. So we can use these to define this class. And that's basically what we're going to do. So we define EK. So this is the geometric construction of the Chevalier generator EK. And it's just the class of EK plus. So this is some, and actually, so it sits inside this top for, it's so it's not so hard to see this. But you can see that the dimension is going to be this top dimension. This is an irreducible component of Z. Which is why it's in this top dimensional piece, by definition. And FK, the geometric construction of our FK will be this, the class corresponding to YK minus. Now I'm being maybe not exactly truthful here. I'm going to put this plus minus. And what I mean by plus minus, so I should say a few things about this. So first of all, these are unions of irreducible components. Right? So remember, Z itself is not connected. So in each connected component of Z, YK plus or minus gives us one irreducible component. So these are not connected. But in each connected piece of Z, they're one of the irreducible components. So when I write a class like this, I mean the sum of the classes corresponding to these irreducible components. And by plus minus, I mean in each, when we break this into a sum, we need to put some plus or minuses in this sum, right? So this is a sum with some plus and minuses of irreducible components of Z when we take this class. So I don't want to just get into the details. It's easy to define this plus minus. Yes, it does. It's given exactly by this dimension that we're sitting in. So then we have the following theorem. And maybe let me make one more, just to make sure people know what I'm talking about when I say universal enveloping algebra. So for any Lie algebra, there's a universal enveloping algebra. So it's an associative algebra. It's just the tensor algebra of the underlying vector space of this Lie algebra mod out by this commutation relations. So the representation theory of the universal enveloping algebra is exactly the same as the representation theory of the Lie algebra itself. It's just this is an associative algebra, which is what we end up getting here. So the map EK to this geometric element EK and FK to the geometric FK extends to a surjective algebra homomorphism. From this universal enveloping algebra to this Borel-Mohr homology with this convolution product. And this is really the best we can hope for. We can't hope for an isomorphism because this is infinite dimensional and this is finite dimensional. But maybe I'll save it at the end, how we can sort of do some limiting procedure to get the whole thing. So we have this surjective algebra homomorphism, so we've geometrically constructed this universal enveloping algebra, or at least some quotient of it. And under this homomorphism, this module that we have is a certain irreducible highest weight representation of the universal enveloping algebra. So it becomes a representation, right? We have this map to topology, to this, top dimensional Borel-Mohr homology, and this as an algebra acts on this, and this is a module. So it becomes a module of this enveloping algebra. And it turns out it's the irreducible highest weight representation, and we can specifically say what highest weight it was. Remember that these irreducible highest weight representations, at least the finite dimensional ones, were in one-to-one correspondence with these non-negative integral linear combinations of the fundamental weights. And so all I have to do is tell you what the W's are, and then this tells you the highest weight of this representation. There's a unique one with this highest weight. What is the W? So WI is the number of I by I Jordan blocks in X. So we can construct any representation we want now. We want to construct one of these representations. We take its highest weight, read off these W's, pick any endomorphism of CD with Jordan normal form, given that it has this many Jordan blocks, and this construction geometrically gives us a construction of this representation. Right? Ah, it's a very good question, so I'm just about to say that. So you can explicitly give this kernel. So here's what this kernel is. Let ID be the annihilator of Cn tensor to the d. So what is this? So SLn is n by n matrices. It acts naturally on Cn. We take the d tensor product, right? And we let ID be this ideal in this universal enveloping algebra, everything that just kills this representation. Then the above homomorphism yields an isomorphism. So basically, ID is exactly the kernel of this map. So we get this isomorphism of the enveloping algebra modulo this ideal is isomorphic to this convolution algebra. And so you can see, remember I said way at the beginning, I said, we'll fix this D, and I'll say at the end about how it relates to what representation we want to construct. So now we can see this. If we want to construct a particular representation, we need an element with a certain Jordan normal form, and that tells us how big our vector space has to be, and we can take this D. Well, let me say just briefly, we can sort of take a limit as D goes to infinity. And what do I mean by that? So these are indexed by, Wn minus 1. We only go up to n minus 1 by n minus 1 Jordan blocks. We can just keep adding n by n Jordan blocks onto this, and it we get exactly isomorphic varieties because of this condition. If we add an n by n Jordan block, it tells us exactly where we have to increase, where we have to add these extra dimensions to the flag. So it doesn't change the variety. So when we take this limit as d goes to infinity, what I mean is we can keep adding n by n Jordan blocks to our matrix and get the exact same representation. And in this limit, we get all of this universal enveloping algebra. So this is called stabilization. Right, so I mean, this is basically this construction. So this construction is, in this formulation, is due to Ginzburg, I mean, this convolution product construction. This was inspired by work of Bellinson, Lustig, and McPherson, who used this flag variety to construct representations of the quantum group. And then, as I mentioned, Nakajima extended this to, well, Lustig and Nakajima extended this to arbitrary Katz-Moody algebra. So Lustig did it for the universal enveloping algebra, and Nakajima did it for the representations, and also modified Lustig's construction a bit for the universal enveloping algebra. So let me just conclude by saying about a few extensions of what we can do with this, or why this is nice. So I mentioned a bit about connections, but let me maybe say a couple of things about a few of these connections. So in particular, these nice bases. So we know enough now to see exactly what some of these nice bases are already. So remember this property of Borel-Moore homology, that since we took the top dimensional Borel-Moore homology, we have as a basis the classes of the irreducible components. So in this particular case, we take the classes of all these irreducible components. This gives us a very natural geometric basis of our representation. This is one of these nice bases. And why are these nice? So let me maybe state at least one of their properties. You can also get nice basis in the universal enveloping algebra. And if you take some highest weight representation, irreducible, V, and take some highest weight element, highest weight vector, you have that this universal enveloping algebra acts on this highest weight vector, and by definition of a highest weight representation generates the whole representation. Right? And so we have this nice basis here, say B, and say we look at the following set. We look at we can act by on this highest weight vector by all these nice basis elements in the universal enveloping algebra. And we look at all of them that aren't zero. This is a basis for V. And if you think about this, this is a really remarkable property because this is true for any highest weight representation. And it's a basis. It doesn't just span. So in general, if you take any basis of the universal enveloping algebra, this set will, of course, span it. But it turns out they're linearly independent. And this is true for any highest weight representation. So we get this nice basis of the universal enveloping algebra that's simultaneously compatible with every single irreducible highest weight representation. So this is one nice property. They also have nice positivity and integrality properties. And so they're nice bases for many ways. And they're very naturally defined in terms of the geometry. And let me see. Maybe I'll say one thing about this. So crystal graph. So what is a crystal graph? Okay, this is MX. This is MX. Yeah. Z is non-compact, which is why we need Borel-Mohr homology. But MX is this. So what's a crystal graph? So a crystal graph is you replace a basis of, say, your representation by a set of vertices. And you replace these Chevalier generators by what are called Cachoeira operators. So we just put a tilde on top of them, and what they are is just colored arrows. In our graph. And to each of these vertices in the graph is associated a weight. And to count, for instance, weight multiplicities of a representation, you just count the number of vertices with that weight, and so you can get weight multiplicities. And there are rules. So for each irreducible representation, the corresponding crystal graph is connected. And if you want to get things like tensor product multiplicities, there's a combinatorial rule for taking the tensor product of two crystal graphs. And then you look at its connected components, and this tells you how this representation splits up into irreducible representations. So there's purely combinatorial ways of giving specific concrete crystal graphs corresponding to certain representations in terms of things like Young tableau and Young diagrams. But you can also do the exact same thing with quiver varieties, where each of your vertices there is one irreducible component in your quiver variety. And then you can construct these Cachoeira operators by natural geometric operations that take one irreducible component to another irreducible component. And so you can construct these combinatorial graphs right from this geometry and then start computing things like weight multiplicities and tensor product multiplicities. And then it turns out that you can make a very nice identification between these combinatorial realizations in terms of things like Young tableau and this geometric realization in terms of quiver varieties. And so you get a nice enumeration in certain cases of these irreducible components by things like tableau and Young diagrams. And you can really see these tableau and Young diagrams, right, just coming naturally from this geometry. So you get some nice interesting connections there. So maybe I'll stop there. So this is a question that I've asked, for instance, Alex and other people. So this is something I don't know, and I keep switching back and forth about whether or not it's interesting. So at times I think it's very interesting, and I start working on it, and then I somehow convince myself that it's not, and I go back and forth. So no, and it's something I would like to understand. Because in this homology, I mean, in the case where everything's smooth and it's the same as cohomology, you have this product, just this normal product in cohomology, which would be some product within a particular weight space. And then you'd have these operators that go between different weight spaces. So it's not true that these Chevalier generators are not ring homomorphisms, but there may be some more complex relation between the two constructions. Yeah, so this is something I've wondered about, but as far as I know, nothing has been done on this. Formulas meaning what? Well, for instance, I wrote a paper where, so one of these, if you take affine Lie algebras, there Kang and some others developed this whole combinatorics called Young Walls to get crystal graphs, and it was purely combinatorial. So one thing I did is give a geometric realization of these Young Walls. And he just did it for what's called level one, which is sort of the case where one of these coefficients is one and all the rest are zero. And once you saw the connection to the geometry, you could extend this Young Wall construction to a higher level. So there are examples where the geometry has, once you make the connection with the combinatorics, then you can see how to generalize the combinatorics. Turns out simultaneously, he also developed a way to extend this to higher level, but the combinatorics did show it. Or that geometry did show it as well.